Hello everyone, and for those who came in late, you've joined us for a special event. Another X-Band the Phantom podcast and Chronicle Chamber sketch session. This time to raise funds for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and the Jimmy Fund. I'm your host for this evening, Duncan Munro, and ably supported by the X-Band team, Jermaine Parker, Dan Fraser, and in the background getting ready in the lead up to this event, Stephen East has been helping out. Welcome, gentlemen. And the pause for this evening is very near and dear to the heart of one of our guests, the Dana-Farber founder, Sydney Farber MD, pioneered the concept of patient-centered care, in which patients are seen not only by physicians and nurses, but also by specialists in other areas of cancer care, such as social work, nutrition, integrative therapies, and many others. Today, Dana-Farber's wide range of patient and family support services help patients move through their cancer experiences. Since 1947, Dana-Farber has forged a groundbreaking path. 75 plus years of research, discovery, and innovation have revolutionized cancer diagnosis and treatment. Further information on the programs founded by your donations for this event, or to learn how you can contribute more, go to dana-farber.org. This is a fitting cause for this evening's event, not only because of the countless lives impacted by the tireless work of the staff at the Institute, but it is a cause near and dear to the heart of our guest of honour this evening. It's a centre offering care to those in need and their families, and is also the kind of facility that should find itself under the Phantom's protection, like Dr. Axel's Jungle Hospital has for many decades. As for the guests we've got this evening, I'm honoured to be introducing our guests, and all three are incredibly talented artists and gentlemen, and I use those terms deliberately. I've met each of our guests and can vouch for their character as well as their abilities. They have all generously invested their time and talents for this event to get behind a fantastic cause and provide an evening of entertainment for us all. Our first guest is Lou Manor. A Staten Island native and a self-taught artist and writer, Lou has worked for decades on comic and corporate art creation. His work has included work for DC on Legion of Superheroes and Justice League, for Marvel on Thunder Agents and House of Mystery. And Phantom fans will know his work from Moonstone and decades later from his full circle story from Fruit Publications. Fans of Lou will know he has a series of self-published sketchbooks featuring several characters, including the Phantom. His debut Fruit story, Full Circle, a two-part adventure written and illustrated by Lou, was originally created during his period with Moonstone. Moonstone's Phantom is coming back. Lou is here and drawing the Phantom again. Coincidence? Let's find out if we can during this event. Lou Manor, welcome to Chronicle Chamber. I'll come back to Lou quickly while I introduce Jeremy. Our second guest this evening is Jeremy McPherson. Jeremy is a Sydney-based artist with an illustrious career in Australian cartoon and comic artwork. His Phantom and Shadow covers and sequential work have seen him maintain his position as a fan favourite in Fru's current stable of creators. Phantom work from Jeremy has featured in Comics Review, the Malin Diaries and Calendars, several print series and bookmarks from Fru Publishing, and after numerous covers, we are now seeing some incredible sequentials from Jeremy, partnered with Aussie creator Dean Rankine. Most recently in Fru's bumper 75th anniversary special, where the amazing story The Box has been the subject of rave reviews. Tonight he joins us, and I'm not overselling his talent when I say that I already want to purchase his finished piece from the winning audience member. Welcome to the Chronicle Chamber sketch session, Jeremy McPherson.
Thank you very much, Duncan. And thanks for the lovely intro.
Nothing less than what you deserve, Jeremy. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you create tonight.
Thank you.
I say tonight because of our other guest. I'm being biased because of the group. But you have got up early in the morning to support us, so we appreciate it. And our guest of honour this evening almost leaves me lost for words to do justice to his contribution to the Phantom as we know and enjoy it today. From 1961 to 1994, he revolutionised the style, tone and essence of the Phantom. Daily and Sunday strips with Lee Falk to bring the classic shadowy pulp hero into the light with his clean lines and beautifully crafted animals, landscapes and action. His Phantom work is the industry litmus test for any Phantom artist who has tried their hand at the character since. With credits including Tarzan, Flash Gordon, Action Comics, Detective Comics, Strange Adventures, he is a co-creator of Crypto and the first of a select group of artists who have created published work for Batman, Superman, and the Phantom. It gives me tremendous pleasure to welcome to the Chronicle Chamber sketch session the legendary Cy Barry. Cy, welcome.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me.
It's amazing to see you, Cy. Thank you for coming and joining us tonight. Now, we've been joined by guests who very very kindly donated their time and donated some funds to be present at the event. We had a limited number of tickets available for that. While our artists get ready and start working on their sketches, and some of them have done some layouts for that already, I'll go through some housekeeping for everybody and then explain how the session is going to work. But we'll get the artists to work straight away because their time is valuable and no one wants to listen to me talk longer than they need to. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you are unfamiliar with these sessions on Zoom, there's a little bit of housekeeping there. Jermaine's already requested that if you haven't already, that you put your microphones to mute. You're more than welcome to leave your camera on as well, but bear in mind we are looking into your lounge rooms, kitchens, and you have consented to be recorded by remaining with your camera on. If you should see six main screens in the gallery view on Zoom that you are interested in. We have each of our artists so that when they answer a question, we can be looking at them. And we have a camera featuring the work as it's being created in front of you. You can pin and unpin those six screens as much as you want. And if you leave it by default, whoever is making the most noise will come up as the main screen on your view. So just right click or go to the ellipses, the top three dots in the right hand corner of the screen you want to look at. Right click on that and select pin or unpin as appropriate. And that will allow you to steer your own experience. If you don't press anything, Jermaine and Dan will steer what you see and try to find the most interesting thing. That's a competition for them to not have me on the screen for the next hour or so. You'll be able to see the creators sketching along as you go, and there'll be a chat in the right-hand side, and I'll be checking that chat to look for questions and ask those questions on your behalf of the artists. And encourage them to be speaking to us while they're talking, or as David Barry, Size Sunset, says, to walk and chew gum at the same time. At the end of the evening, as the sketches are finished off, and we'll use a random number generator to select winners for each of the pieces. As each name is drawn, they'll then be taken out of the draw to give the remaining people in the pool a chance. So if you have a ticket for tonight's event, you have a very good odds of walking away with one of the fantastic pieces you're seeing created this evening. So I'm going to just have a look in the chat and see how we're going with that. I'll go here with a question from Daniel for everyone, for all three artists. So I'll ask each of you in turn while you're working away there. What was your favorite era or run of stories of the newspaper strips? And do you still follow the strip? I'm going to ask Jeremy that question first, so, and I'll ask it in two separate questions. So your favorite era of the stories or the newspaper strips?
Okay. I'd have to say probably the Cy Barry era, which is what I grew up with, particularly through the early 90s. I think it really reached one of the many peaks in that time. I think particularly a lot of those stories in the early 90s, I think the standard was so high, with Cy's amazing inking and, of course, George Olson, the team. It was really amazing to see. I think that's probably one of my favourites, but, of course, I love all of the Ray Moore, Wilson McCoy, Paul Ryan, all of the artists. I think they're fantastic. But I think the stories you grew up with are always special, and they always have an impact on you.
And we're in an interesting time at the moment, Jeremy, with Mike Manley currently being hospitalised and care of the Daily Strip, likely to transition to Jeff Weigel for both the Daily and the Sunday Strips, something that hasn't only been done a few times since I did that. Do you still follow the Strip?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I enjoy Tony's stories and Mike and Jeff's art. I actually have some of Jeff's art, which some original. Actually may have the first Sunday. But I really do enjoy all the stories. And I think particularly both Jeff and Mike with their history. I mean, Mike worked with Al Williamson. You know, he's got such a heritage with all the great strip artists. And, of course, Jeff, he's done a lot of work with the Two Morrows books, all sorts of things. the classic Kurt Swan books, the design he's done. I think it's fantastic to have that link back with the heritage of comic strips, because adventure strips, they're in a bit of a rough period at the moment, but we are lucky to have such top-rated artists working on the strips.
Absolutely. Great answer. Thanks, Jeremy. I'm going to ask you a slightly different question because for humility, the strips before and after you, what is your favorite era of those strips? Was it the influence on before you became the Phantom artist or post?
Well, I came out of the golden era of comics, and I was one of the last residents in that era. And I've met all of the greats through the National Cartoonist Society. I think so. I always liked adventure stories, adventure strips. The more dedicated mystery strips and like Secret Agent X9 and Rip Kirby, and I loved Alex Raymond's work and Hal Foster, of course. And I'm really out of that era, like a late resident, and I like to Milton Caniff. Someone mentioned your previous guest mentioned the artist that did
Excellent.
Superman, Swan. I worked with him on Superman up at DC, so that's how. And I think one of my favorite, of course, one of my favorite artists that I followed very deeply was Hal Foster. It was his kind of illustration that had a great influence over me, and my brother Dan's work had a very strong influence with me too. So, what I wanted to do to the Phantom, I remember reading it before I got onto it. I remember reading it and saying that strip could use some adjustment, and I would have loved to. I would love to get that strip someday and give it a real slam bang adventure look to it, with a lot of drama and more emotion in the strip as well. And when as luck would have it, I did fall into the strip, and it was the greatest surprise for me that I was called in to do it. And it from all those 33 years have been a wonderful experience. It gave me the opportunity to do just what I wanted to a strip that I thought needed more modern look to it, and more guts to it. And that's I began to change some things, such as the Phantom's trench coat. I took that checked technique out of it, the pattern. I didn't think that helped the character very much. I thought it didn't make him look mysterious enough. So it took away from the mystery and mystique out of it. So I changed that. I put the hood around his face. And I took the hood rather off his face when he was Mr. Walker. And also changed the dog, which gradually made him into a wolf. He was kind of a non kind of dog before, and I thought indeed he needed more character, more sternness and aggressiveness, aggressive look to it. So there were many things that I decided I needed to do to give it more character. Another thing I did, I began to give the Phantom some serious expressions, of anguish and anger, and the happiness, and a big smile when he needed it, when he was really happy. I took that stone face appearance off of him, and you know the Phantom Cliff, He wasn't a rock face, the Phantom. He was, as a human being, I wanted to make him more human, more acceptable, for people to see him as an individual, as a human being. And I changed Diana. I fashioned her after Jacqueline Smith, of Charlie's Angels. I think everybody knows that sequence, that feature. I use her hairstyle and somewhat of her looks, but I gave her a little bit stronger nose than Jacqueline Smith has. So these were the things that I began changing, and I try to make the skull cave look a little more rugged and a little more rocky than it had been looking. And working on the inside of the cave, the different areas of the cave, the chronicle room and the treasure room. And so I got try to give it a place that you, when I came back to it during the different sequences, the reader would remember it because I would follow what I had designed before, and I kept it very consistent. So those were the things I try to bring into the script to update it and modernize it and make it more enjoyable to read and fit the character that was present that was being featured.
If
So,
your
well,
intent,
I'll stop there.
if your intent, Si, was to make some tweaks to the strip, you've well and truly accomplished that over your time. The
Yes, very
you
serious quakes.
absolutely,
Right.
it's and to all of our benefit that since then you've just created inspiration for decades of artists to follow in your footsteps and try to add their own touch, but it comes back to those major changes that you made. So amazing.
Right.
And on behalf of everybody, thank you. Do
I
you
hope
still check? Sorry.
I hope characters that he introduced were of interest. I tried to make them interesting and human. So I hope the audience appreciated what I tried to put into the strip and bring it into a more modern era.
If the comments I hear from fans about their fascination with Diana's beauty, when a lot of them don't know who Jacqueline Smith was or Charlie's Angels anymore, you've definitely done
Oh, no.
that. And your touch on Neville is you did make him look like a wolf, and that's what the artists do now. It is it's Cy Barrie's devil that people draw.
I always enjoy drawing it because once I gave it a different kind of fur and coloring and a larger door and more aggressive kind of dog. Okay, that's what I want him like look like. That the only one that could really control him is the Phantom and no one else.
Excellent work. And do you still check in on the strip now, every now and then? It's not in a lot of the papers
You know,
anymore. Most people.
it's not it has not been in print around my area in when I lived in New York and here in Massachusetts too. I don't see it in any I don't see it used to be, I believe, in the Tribune, the Boston Tribune, and it's not there anymore. It's unfortunate because I think our American audience has switched to humor strips, funny strips, and they're not too interested in adventure. They're interested in space things, and the abstract, more abstract, surrealistic things. They're not really interested in the Phantom. What I liked about the Phantom, and I thought was very different than most of the strips, is the fact that it not only had adventure, but it also had this mystique character to it that was it had some fantasy to it. The legend that the Phantom lived 400 years. I mean, that was a wonderful addition to the character of the script. It gave it more richness. And I enjoyed working on it because of its quality of this fantasy and adventure as well.
Absolutely. And the experience with you're not being able to find the strips in your local paper is not a unique to North America experience. It's a global demise in access to those strips. So a lot of the fans currently follow online, and one of the more reliable for the strips is the artists themselves, posting their strips each week on social media. So Jeff Weigel and Mike Manley currently. That's how I find it most reliably and in the easiest to read format. But it is great to hear your views on that time when you made that evolution in the strip that, in my opinion, has made it so it's still alive today.
Well, that was always my concept as to how the Phantom should be done, because I thought it was a very unique idea. The concept was very unique, and I enjoyed that. It gave me the impetus to want to do the strip. But when you mentioned about Lee Falk, about the writing and the artwork, Lee Falk would not agree with you. He would think that his writing was more than my artwork. So we always had a little battle between the artwork and the writing.
I don't think that dynamic is unique to just your relationship. I think there's a lot of writers and artists that collaborate together just as much as they disagree about how the story should be told. I'm just going to throw across to Lou and try again and see how we go with the audio. Lou, how are you?
Are we okay? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. That's fantastic. Your piece is coming along great there.
Great. My first dealing with the Phantom was the Gold Key issues in the 60s. The Bill Ligonetti stuff, but those covers, what really got me, because I had never seen a painted cover before. I've never seen a superhero painted in oil. And it was fascinating. It actually looked like a real person. And I think it was modeled after the same guy who that Steve Hal Holland, I think he used him for some of his shots, but we didn't know it back then. And then those issues were just something I looked forward to every month, even though I was a big DC and Marvel collector or fan. And I liked the same ones that Cy mentioned, Kurt Swan, and I like Murphy Anderson, and then later on, Jim Buscema, and people like that. And of course, Cy's Phantom was the Phantom, as far as I was concerned. You couldn't get a better one. I mean, Don did an excellent job. He made him more darker, a little darker than Cy did him. But Cy did him as a heroic figure and just a straight-on heroic kind of figure. Where Bill's was more scratchy style, his stuff was a little bit more. I think he was a quartz artist at one time, so I think he had a little more sketchier style. But I loved those early Phantoms, and then of course I started following the work in the newspaper and Cy's work, and I was a big fan of Cy's work and his brother Dan when he did Flash Gordon, and you can't find a better Phantom artist anywhere in any of the decades. Any of us have do it. The guys who do it well, the guys who do it okay, he's the standard that everyone tries to, I don't say copy, because you can't really copy size stuff. You have to kind of homogenize your style into making it a little bit different where you can. I try to make him a little darker. I picture him in my mind like a Conan for some reason. I don't know. The face to me has a when he's rugged looking, is a Conan type face. And the crooked nose and the things like that. In fact, I think John Buscema drew him once, and there he was. He drew the Phantom, looked like Conan. But we all do different variations of him. Lately, I've been reading where a lot of people think he's too dark. So I've been sitting down lately trying to come up with like whimsical kind of Phantom drawings, ones where he's more lighthearted, but those early ones especially still stick with me today. And then later on, like I said, when Don Newton did the Charlton ones, I thought that was pretty close to what I thought he could look like, what I wanted him to look like as well. And, luckily I've on and off associated with him now over 20 years, which, the very first samples I ever brought around and sent out to anybody, I had a friend of mine's father who worked in a print shop and printed out copies. And the very first Phantom, the same things I ever sent out to DC or Marvel or anybody were Phantom illustrations, Phantom comics. So it was a character I always loved. Again, you could do anything with him. You had any time period, You could have them fighting Nazis. You could have them in the 18th century. You could have them, you could have them all, almost any period. And I thought that's what I really, the appeal to me of the character was. I thought really that was something that any writer or any artist would love to do, because you weren't pigeonholed into one particular time frame. You could kind of take them anywhere. And I think the one I did, the full circle one, I had him go. I wanted the father to be in World War II fighting Nazis, and that's the reason why I did that particular story. Was it because I wanted the modern Phantom? I kind of wanted the old way. I wanted the 40s type of Phantom, and the Moonstone stuff was more contemporary, and I enjoyed my time, but I it's a character who I keep saying to myself, I'm not going to do any Phantom stuff for a while. I'm going to get away from it. I'm going to go do some of the DC stuff, and I'm going to do some of the Thunder Agent work, get some peace. And then, but something happens. You'll see something triggers, and the next thing I know, I'm watching television. I'm sketching out another Phantom idea or a cover or a concept, and you just can't get rid of the character. Once it's in your head ingrained, I think you kind of stuck with him the rest of your life. So.
And is there, with your full circle story, that you originally drew around the time you were working for Moonstone, and then
Yeah,
reinvigorated it for Frew with Glenn Ford? Is that right?
well, what happened was I did two Moonstone graphic novels with 48 pages, and then I think Joe was going in a different direction. He was going to live for, I don't know. We just kind of drifted on that after that second one. There was a lot of problems with that second issue. The inker took off with a bunch of pages, and somebody else had to come in at the last minute and ink a bunch of them. By blue lines, the coloring wasn't. If you look at the black and whites that were inked by these people, they did a really nice job, I thought. But you couldn't see any of it because the coloring was really muted, because the paper that they used didn't really help the quality. The first one I did, they used glossy stock, looked pretty good. The second one, they didn't use the glossy stock, and it kind of got muddied. But what happened was I did another one. I said, oh, I'm going to do my own. I'll see if they want to buy it. Somehow Glenn got a hold of it, took a look at it, and asked if I could, if they were interested in publishing that one. And I was sure I'm more than happy to do it. And I did a few alterations. I think I redrew a couple of pages, and it went well. And then I did a second one that they bought, but they haven't used yet. And then I had done a few more that on spec basically for them, and things got kind of bogged up, so that was it. Just recently, I did the cover for the new Phantom coloring book that's going to be coming out,
Oh
and
wow! Is that through Fru or
Hermes.
Hermes? All right.
Yeah,
I
and
think that's a
oh,
Chronicle
really?
Chamber exclusive.
Yeah, no one's supposed to. I think she's supposed to announce it. No one knows, but yeah, I think she was announcing it this month or something. She was supposed to announce it in October, but I had done the cover for that, which was a kick, a big thrill for me to do that, get back into them again, and hopefully they like it. They liked it, so hopefully people will like it.
Wow. And is there a, you mentioned that one of the appeals for the character is the amount of generations you can go back to. In Full Circle, you did that, taking the Phantom back and looking at his father, and you looked at a more modern version with your earlier Moonstone work. Is there a generation or a time period you'd like to do some work on the Phantom from?
I always liked the 40s for some reason. I don't know what the period of time, the cars, the clothes, the Art Deco kind of look. I always thought the 40s was a good period for a lot of superheroes. I think a lot of the superheroes in the 50s kind of lost their way because they weren't villains to fight. Like you couldn't fight the Nazis, you couldn't fight saboteurs and things like that. You had, back then in the 40s, that you could kind of do a lot of different kind of stories with the Phantom's father because of so many World War implications. And I'd like that period of time anyway, so I'd like to do another one someday in that vein. I think it would be, a good idea, but
Right. I'm just going
never know.
to throw.
Every time you think you're done with this character, something pops up, it seems like. So
It'd be
just
just
looking
when you
forward
think
to
you're
it.
out, he drags you back in.
Every time I think I'm out,
Yeah.
they pull me back in, but I look forward to the next opportunity with
I'm not sure that's an old jungle saying. But I have heard it before. I'm going to come back around to Jeremy. There's a question in the chat for all the artists. And it talk there's a few chats around seeing the Phantom's eyes. And the question specifically that comes from Ross is in Falcone's latest stories suggested that the Phantom's eyes couldn't be seen through his mask. In the early stories, this is obviously not the case. What is in your mind when you are drawing the Phantom? Can when he is interacting with someone, can they see his eyes through that mask?
I think probably, often because it was depicted as white, you sort of a blank mask, you that's generally how I think of it. Now if you look closely through some of the stories, I think there are a few ones where you would see a bit of a glimpse. I think there might have even been a story once where you might have seen the Phantom's eyes through sunglasses, which was a bit of a shock. But yeah, I think generally that's the way I think of it. And I know when the eyes appeared in the daily strip, I did look away in case. But
Magnetic, Monday. I know.
And what did you think about that, Jeremy? That's another question in the chat. When Tony and Mike made that decision in that foretold story by Old Man Moz, that at that moment when he looks up, that we see the Phantom's eyes, and there's no mistaking it. There's no Bill Lignante, is he surprised at Queen Samaris? It was a very deliberate decision. Besides looking away, just in case the old jungle saying was true, what did you think about that?
Well, I know that Tony has written on his blog extensively about the reasons for why, and it was a creative choice, sort of even a comment on adventure strips and how many of them are either coming to an end or are losing papers, sadly. So I think he is doing some work that he'd like to do as a last story and extending some of the storylines. So yeah, look, I think I do understand why he did it. It wasn't just something he did lightly. So he had a reason and he had a creative choice for it. So yeah.
And Lou, being inspired for a long time since your early days of pitching work to get into the industry and drawing the Phantom, the same question for you. What do you think about showing the Phantom's eyes, not showing it? Do you think that when he's interacting with someone up close and personal, that they can see through that white mask?
You probably they probably could, but I don't think any artist really wants to draw it that often because it kind of takes the mysterious nature of them away. I know Neil Adams was doing it lately in some of his later Batman pieces. He was putting eyeballs in there occasionally, and it distorts the look of the character. The Phantom, I don't think you should ever see his eyes, and I don't think that the reader wants to anticipate the someone in the strip seeing his eyes. So I would say probably not, because I think he'd cover him up well. Maybe through the sunglasses he could see slightly, but I really never thought of ever putting a eye. He's a tough character to do sometimes, facial expression wise. When you can't do eyes, and there's really not much room for his eyebrows, it's tough sometimes to get those facial expressions. You have to kind of fudge it somewhere along the line, I think, at times. So I did it great. So I had him. You saw full expressions on him all the time. I don't know how he did it because, like I say, when you don't see eyeballs or eyes or eyebrows, it's a little tough to get expressions, but he does it.
Great answer, and I will throw it aside that so that my understanding is the original intent with Lee Falk and the earlier artists was around copying that Greek statue, intimidating wide eyes, so that you don't know what he's thinking, and you don't know it is a little more intimidating. But as Lou said, you were able to pull it off and give us that expression, whether it was happiness, intimidation, sternness. Or at the odd times, nervousness or anxiety. What was your secret?
Okay, well, that was a it was quite a problem to solve and to work with, And I agree. It is. It did cut down your ability to get full expression in the phantom, because the eyes are so much, such an important part of the face, and there's so much expression in the eyes. But you know, he does have a mouth, and he has cheeks, and he has frown lines. You know, and he has laugh lines, and I when he would be laughing, I would kind of spread the white area of the mask,
Right.
spread it out to make it like his, you know, his face is expanding in laughter. So there are little tricks that you could use to create the expression you want to create. And but we were all limited, very limited because of that. But I enjoyed the fact that he didn't, his eyes didn't show. And I was very upset when Lignanti put the eyes in there. I didn't think he did, it justified the intent of the Phantom. I mean, don't forget, he's supposed to be a ghost who walks, and there's supposed to be a intriguing look about him, mysterious look. And I think not showing the eyes lends to this, it lends itself to that kind of attitude and atmosphere. So that's what I try to pick, the very good things that I enjoyed about Lee's writing, and I try to pick them out and exaggerate them and give more meaning to the strip itself. So my feeling was that keeping the white mask, the white eyes, and the mask was, you have to let the audience think a little bit. You know, in painting, which I've been doing a lot of, you have to leave some things there for the audience. You don't put in every detail for the reader or the viewer. Let them follow it through. Let them see a little more than your painting or what you're drawing. And I think having the white, white cover over the eyes, I would say there was probably a very thin veil that was part of the mask, so that it could see that through that very thin veil. But I enjoyed doing it. I was very upset when I saw eyes there. It should not. I didn't think it fit the character.
Great
That's
answer.
my
And
feeling.
as someone who is probably one of the only people in the chat today that's worn a Phantom costume on stage, I almost fell off the stage because it was very hard to see through the material that we were able to get to give that wide-eyed look. The
The costume in one of my dinners that you were wearing the costume too.
If that wasn't me, that was someone in much better shape than me. So,
Oh, was
there was
Oh, it was a big guy.
but what, there is another
Right.
question here directed at you, Si, while we're talking about how you created some of the characters, and it's from Ross,
Yeah.
and he's asked, the design for Uncle Dave changed dramatically during your time, according to Ross. And the new design looks a lot like you, in Ross's opinion. And how did this change come about? Did you make Uncle Dave look more like you?
Not really. I took away that clump of hair that he had in front. I thought
Yep.
that was originally there. I gave him I'm his hair was more like mine. That's about as far as it went. I
And
his hair,
with
hair, hair I made it further back and without that part, no part in the hair, and just his hair straight back, which is the way I keep my hair. So that's about the only thing I change in his face. But I kept the pipe.
was there absolutely, and was there change when you did changes like that to the characters? Was there an approval process with either King Features or Lee, or was it just up to you?
It's up to me. Yeah, I made those changes myself. I mean, I never told Lee what I was doing. I never said, "Well, I think he should look like, oh, I'm going to change the dog," or anything. I never did any of that. Or, "I'm going to change the trench coat." No, I did it myself. And if they wanted to change, somebody back at the Kingfishers would have to change it, and they'd have to have my permission. But I, whatever changes I made, they kept they thought it'd modernize it. Lee never admitted it, but he told others that he liked the changes I made. Never told me. Never told me that. He told others. So
Lee,
that's the thing about the mask, really.
and was there an influence for you on Aunt Lily, on Diana's mother? I'm sorry, on Lily, on Diana's mother.
Yeah, I saw her more as Mary Worth.
Yep.
Sort of a Mary Worth character.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And
The
you
more
mentioned
modern version. She
the more
looked
modern
entirely
version.
different when that strip of Mary Worth. She was originally called Apple Mary.
Right.
You didn't know that.
I didn't.
Yeah. Joe Giella changed it, my friend Joe Giella.
Oh, wow.
I guess everyone must know Joe Giella.
We
He
do,
did. He worked on Batman.
and
And so
you worked
he,
on Batman together, is that
Mary
right?
Worth. Pardon me?
Sorry, I just cut over you. You worked on Batman at first with Joe, and then on the Phantom.
No. Joe worked on it. Joe worked on it with Bob Kane originally. And then it was back in the late 40s, early 50s. And then other artists started to take it over. Bob Kane started to slow down, and they expanded Batman into different ver different books and more stories because he was becoming very popular. And so there were other artists that were working on it. One artist was Jerry Robinson, who did quite a, he's the one who developed the character of the Joker. Okay.
And yeah,
And
absolutely.
the guy with the umbrella and the tuxedo,
The Penguin.
The Penguin, yeah. He developed those characters, Jerry Robinson. And I inked a couple of his stories, a wonderful artist. And I also finished a story that he couldn't finish. He was sick, and I finished penciling and inking the story. So I worked on quite a few, all the main characters there. Superman, I worked with Kurt Swan, and I don't know. No, I was just, it was only Kurt Swan's work that I worked on Superman. And then some work on Bill Kane's pencils. I inked Gail Kane's. And then I broke away from adventure and began to do romance on my own pencils and inks. And I enjoyed that
Amazing.
too.
And
Then came the Phantom.
is it correct that you had an influence over the look of Krypto in Superman? Is that right?
That I had influence over what?
The appearance of Krypto, Superman's dog.
Yes.
So was that one of the early
I had,
stories, was it?
I did have a more rugged version of him, but they, as the other artists took over, they started to change it. I didn't have a blank looking fur, or I had some markings on the dog, and they changed that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you've influenced Superman's dog and the Phantom's wolf.
Yes.
You,
And now
excellent work.
I mean, got off the strip. By the time I got off the strip, it was a wolf. It was no longer a mixture of a German Shepherd and a wolf. It was a wolf.
There is no denying that the devil is a wolf.
I had to change the dog gradually. I couldn't do it suddenly. So I started to put those, some black markings on, and then gradually into a shepherd, and then into a wolf.
So there's a project there for anyone that's listening to the podcast that wants to put together some content for Chronicle Chamber. If we can get a cut together of all of Sy's interpretations of Devil over time as he gradually morphs from the gray, sh graggy, shaggy gray dog into the terrifying Bengal and Mountain Wolf.
That's right. Terrifying is right.
And you mentioned working with Joe, and we worked with some other greats as well. We recently lost Joe, which was a terrible shame. He was a wonderful gentleman. Is there any more? Is there a story that you wanted to share, particularly about your work with Joe, either on your DC work or on the Phantom?
I'll tell you, we worked very well together, and he came closer to my inking style than most of the other artists that worked with me. And he was very talented, Joe. And you know, he and I went to the same high school. We were in the same class, Joe and I, and there were two other guys that were in my class as well. Tony Bennett was a year ahead of me in my school. He studied art first, Tony Bennett. So,
Yeah.
and when we knew him, he was just another guy. He was an artist studying, struggling to learn. He was in the illustration class, and he wasn't singing then. I mean, he was 15, 16 when we knew him, and he lived in Joe Gill neighborhood. And when he started singing, the other guys in his neighborhood were very jealous of him, of Joe, Tony, because he was starting to make records, you know, and he was just coming up, just beginning, then being introduced onto television shows. And the neighborhood friends stopped talking to him because they were very jealous of him. They thought he was out of their, he was acting like he was out of their league, you know. And Joe said, no, he was the sweetest guy. He was the most unassuming guy. He was very close friends with Joe. Yeah. So he having known some of the greatest artists at the time, you know, having met so many of them through the Cartoonist Society, I had a good life and a wonderful experience knowing these people. Wonderful life, and I don't regret any part of it.
And it sounds like a real sliding doors moment there with you and Joe and Tony Bennett. Could we just as easily have seen Tony Bennett crafting the Phantom in the papers and you singing I've Got You Under My Skin on the stage in Vegas?
Wouldn't
There was
that
no
be cute?
temptation.
I'd love I don't know if you ever saw any of Tony Bennett's paintings.
I'd never
Do
seen
you
Tony. I did not know Tony Bennett had that bent.
Oh, he's very talented. He always was painting. He never stopped painting, even through his whole career. He never stopped. Joe told me that he never stopped painting.
Amazing.
And Joe would be in touch quite often. Yeah.
So
Because he
I'm
knew him
just,
from the neighborhood.
that's incredible. I never knew that story. I'm just going to quickly go around and have a look at the progress of some of the
I mean,
pieces that we've got. Sorry, go on.
he was a very quiet, unassuming guy, Tony. Very pleasant guy, and always had a smile. Always a very, very nice guy. Very nice guy.
Amazing. There
I
must be
met him a
something in the
few
water
times
there.
in Manhattan in
Pardon me?
Lee's art supply store on 57th Street. Greatest guy in the world. Would open the door, talk to you. He would buy art supplies at the same place I was getting mine. You're right. He was very
Oh, really?
down to earth.
Oh, what was the store? That wasn't Arthur Brown, was it?
Now, Arthur Brown was on 48th Street. This was a Lee's. I think it was
Oh.
on up the, I was 59th or 58th Street and off of 8th Avenue.
Oh, okay.
I used to catch him in
Yeah,
there.
I
He'd
didn't
buy art supplies. Nice
know
man.
about
Very
that. You
nice.
see? I
Very
told you he
humble.
was always painting. Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
very humble.
Yeah. Interesting guy.
Wow. I'm just going to quickly go
Meanwhile,
around and. Sorry, go. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not getting much work done. I'm talking so much. I'm not getting. I should be working while I'm
Keep
talking.
talking. We're all enthralled. The other artists stopped working as well to listen to you. So I'm
Yeah.
just going to check in.
Yeah.
I'm just going to check in with the other pieces.
As long
Sorry,
as
go.
I go ahead.
I'm just going to check in on some of the pieces. Your piece there is looking fantastic. A wonderful example of the action and life that you can bring to a single still image. I always feel like I'm watching a film when I'm reading your sequentials. And Lou, I'm just pinning your piece in there. I'm really liking the inking and the depth that you've given into your lines. What's the inspiration for that piece? Where did what was the initial concept in your head when you came up with what you were going to decide to draw for this event?
Nothing really. I didn't think of what I was going to do until I put the pencil to the paper and then just
Wow.
came out.
Incredible. And what I'm just looking through the chat here with some of the questions that are in here. And you've expressed an interest in the World War II era and that 40s era, and that's what you did with your Full Circle story. What's something that's particularly interesting for you in to draw that and do a creation in that era? Is it the characterization, vehicles? Do you like the fashion, creating characters there, or what the Phantom would be doing in that war era?
Yeah, probably a little bit of everything. I really like the period piece itself. I remember years ago, I had worked in an art studio with another guy, and we both did a Rocketeer piece that Dave Stevens was looking for his assistance at the time to help him finish out a book. And we did a piece that looked very similar to what he had. It's what he kind of wanted, and we showed it to him, and he's like, "Yeah, this is what I want." And we just didn't click because he was in the West Coast, I was on the East Coast, but it was all Art Deco. It was all the Art Deco buildings. It was our cars. It was the clothes. And I don't know. Maybe I was. I like that period for some reason. I mean, I was born in the 50s, but I like the stuff in the 40s. And I just think that you can. It's a simpler time. It's a simpler character where you can put him in a situation where he could really be heroic. Doing something
Yeah.
to stop the war effort. Nazis. They're always the go-to villains when you have to need somebody in World War II that you can do so much with those characters that they're so evil, so terrible that they make perfect villains for that for the 40s period of time. And I just think some of the characters that, like, in other words, some of the characters that DC had in the 40s, they didn't translate well in the 50s and 60s. They just didn't. They were made for that period of time. The beauty of the Phantom is, yeah, you could use him in the 40s and again in the 60s, and you could put him in the 80s, and he goes at any period of time. But I just think the 40s for me, that particular genre. I mean, when I did Young All Stars for DC, that was a 40s period piece, and I enjoyed that too because again, cars, clothes. That we did the Unisphere, we did the 1939 World's Fair in that set of books I did, and looked up the reference for the 1939 World's Fair. I enjoyed that more than anything because, I guess I just like that period of time. And I have a few ideas, but again, ideas are great to have, but there's no outlet for them. They're hard to do. But Dick Giordano once told me, he said, when you first start out and you draw for everybody and you do things for your friends and stuff like that, he said, the minute you become a professional, you won't do that anymore. You won't work for free. And I didn't understand what he meant. I guess what he meant was when you become a professional, it's hard to turn it on and off for people unless you have a vehicle, unless it could be, you could get 10 cents for the particular job that you're doing, but there's something that feels good inside about doing something that people like, that you're getting compensated for a bit, and it makes your work better too, I think. I mean, I think people do a better job when they know there's something at the end of the rainbow. And, I that always stuck with me when he said that, and I didn't realize why. But like I said, somebody asked me after that to do something, and I was like, okay. But I understood what he meant. When you become a professional, you have to act like a professional. You have to treat it like a business, and you could have the greatest ideas in the world, but if you're not getting anything for them, it's tough to make a living. I mean, this is a business. We make a living. We feed our families with this stuff, and it's hard, and it's getting harder and harder to do it. I mean, luckily, thank God, I'm at that stage in my life where I don't have to do this every day, but I still love doing it. So it's something that's in your blood. You never get tired of it. I'm sure Cy will tell you. I'm sure he gets a
Absolutely.
blank piece of pencil in his hand. he's going to draw something. Is this going to come out?
And Lou, do you, with Moonstone starting up publication again in the new year, if Joe Gentile or the publication team, the editorial team from Moonstone come knocking, is there a Phantom story loaded in your mind that you'd be ready to set your mind to and your pen to?
Yeah, I have three stories that are completely done, penciled, inked, lettered, everything, and just sitting there, and they'll maybe never see print, but they're there, extra ones, stuff I did on spec, something I did on just for my own. Well, maybe I said I could try to sell this here or there, but I always have ideas. Like I said, the Phantom, it's a funny thing. You could read the paper one day and see something and say, hey, that would make a great Phantom story, or that would make a great Phantom illustration, or I see something in a magazine, and I go, boy, that jungle setting looks great. Imagine him sitting in that, pool of water or something like that. So there's always something percolating. It's just a matter of getting it out there. I did a cover for India's comic, Phantom comic, recently, which was pretty well received. And again, I asked to do more, and they never respond. So, it's a tough business. It's very, you. It's almost like you have to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, no matter how old and no matter how long you've been doing this. If you really want to keep doing it, you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get knocked down. They call me a comic book veteran now. It feels like I was in the comic book wars. I mean,
Well,
at a
speaking
certain
on
age,
behalf of the
you have a certain style that's no longer commercial. Let's say it's not the current trend. I mean, I've seen a lot of the stuff that's out there these days, and I'm shocked by how the lack of quality. I mean, for every 10 artists that are terrific, and I'm talking about major books, major DC titles or whatever, the quality is just not there. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why they're producing this stuff. There are hundreds of illustrators out there who were probably working in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, 2000s even, who would draw rings around. I'm not saying myself, I'm saying the general bunch of all who would draw rings around some of the stuff that's out there. They won't get a chance. They'll never get a chance. They're not Generation Z. They're not 20-year-old kids that are willing to work for 10 cents or willing to listen to some editor throw their weight around because that's what they think they have to do to keep their job. It's the people that can do this because they like to do it and can make a living doing it. God bless them. That's the best thing that can happen. But this business it'll chop you into pieces if you're not tough enough to stick with it. It's a tough business. It's just a it's a business that we all love because we love it. We grew up with it. I'm sure Cy will tell you he had famous artists that he liked. Hal Foster, I love his stuff as well. Then every generation in the 50s and 60s had their artists that they love and became artists out of it or writers. It's a business that we can't take out of our. I worked for corporate. I worked as an art director for major banks in New York for 15 years. I hated every day of it because it was nothing really creative. And I would run home at night as fast as I could to draw somebody's book, an independent book, something overseas. I would just run, eat, and jump to go up to the studio and do whatever I could because that's what I love to do and still love to do it. It's just. It gets frustrating when you're at a certain point in life where and actually you feel like at one point you're actually better than you were at any point. Then I feel like at this stage of my art work wise, anything that I did in the past is probably so good in my head. Things I feel I'm better, that doesn't mean I'm going to get any work out of it. It's just the way it is in this business. It's just a matter of if the Moonstone. I checked that with Moonstone since they announced they were going to do new books. They were looking for cover artists. I sent them a bunch of covers, and Joe has said they weren't really looking right now. So again, tomorrow that could change. Joe could call tomorrow and say, "Hey, we'd like you to do something," and I'd be happy to do it. But you can't bank on it. That's something I can
Lou,
bank on.
as a consumer of your work, all I can say on behalf of the other fans is thank you for your persistence, because it's definitely a lifelong pursuit that you've invested in, and the rewards are, though they might be far between, that your work is appreciated at the other end, and we
Thank
wouldn't
you.
have seen that without the persistence that you've been demonstrating that whole time. So it's
A
great
quick
that
story about
Regal.
a quick story about persistence. When I first started out, I went every month. at DC for 3 years. Jack Adler, God bless him, took pity on me, and he would look at my work and tell me to go home and draw hands. And I go home and draw the hands. I come back, go home and draw the buildings. It was stink on building. Okay, faces. This went on for 3 years. I was either too stupid to quit, or just too focused, the tunnel vision to what I wanted to do. When I finally showed the samples one day to Dick Giordano and Dave Maddock, they looked at my samples. They got a phone call. I went home. When I got home, my wife said, "Did you go to DC Comics today?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, they were looking for you. They wanted to give you work." I said, "What?" I called them back. They said, "Where'd you go? You left." I said, "I was so used to getting rejected. I just went home." They said, "We want to give you a script." I said, "If I come in tomorrow, am I going to get a script?" They said, "Yes, yes, we'll have something for you." So I, all night, like I said to my wife, I don't want the Flash. I hope they don't give me this. I don't want that. Well, they gave me a story the next day. It was a werewolf Western. And I never drew a Western in my life. But, you know, it was great training. It was 3 years of mystery books. I did nothing but mystery short stories, 8 pages, 10 pages, 5 pages. But it was great training because you had to learn. You had to learn to draw age. You had to learn to draw horse. You had to learn to draw things that you didn't really want to draw when you were starting out. You would draw Superman, a man, and punchy people. They don't have great training anymore for these kids. They don't have. They come in cold. They get a book. They freeze half the time on it. They get screwed up and they can't tell a story. A lot of them. That training was terrific. That really helped me a lot as far as learning how to tell a story, learning how to angle things, learning how to be like a director when you're drawing things. And it's a shame that they really don't have that anymore, because I think a lot of the kids that are starting out today could use those stories to get better at it.
If nothing else, Lou, you can lay claim to the title of being a pioneer in the werewolf Western genre. That's certainly one that hasn't been overdone.
And it was terrible. And they sent me home and said, "Go home and draw it again." And I did. And Sam Granger is an old inker, but he was a professional. They gave it to him, the ink. And I saw it when I got it back. I'm like, "Oh my God, it looks so nice. What did he do?" It was all him. It wasn't me. I was terrible. But he, you know, and I had gotten those type of inkers for a long time. Tex Blaisdell, Sal Trapani, John Salado. I had all those guys cleaning up my mess, basically. But it was great because I saw what I did and what they did to it, and taught me how to be a little bit better at it, you know. But again,
wow. And I'm going to check in on Jeremy because he's quietly working away there on what can only be described as a masterpiece. I don't know how it goes from a blank piece of paper into something that looks so incredible before our eyes. I'm glad you're doing it in front of me so that it's not just what I've normally believed it to be, which is some sort of magical trick that you pull when no one is looking. I'm going to ask, what was the inspiration behind what you've chosen to draw there today, Jeremy? What was?
I think I really wanted to do sort of a very classic Phantom and Hero. I do like Hero. I was thinking about maybe doing a waterfall scene, but I thought that's maybe a little bit complicated doing it all live here with the brush. So I've just gone a little bit more kind of a sort of Wollywood, Hal Foster type trees, that sort of leaf pattern. And it's such a privilege to be here, really. I know a lot of people in Australia will remember when Sly Barry came in 1998, and I was there. Dietmar brought Sly over, and I was one of the many people in the crowd. And I got to meet Sly. Yeah.
Were you in the costume, Jeremy?
No, I was just in high school then, but I came down. And it was like a rock star, just the huge crowd. And he is a rock star.
Absolutely. And we've heard both Sai and Lou talk about the influence of their peers in the community. Mm-hmm. Sai talked about being a membership of the Cartoonist Society. You're in involved in that environment a lot in the Australian scene, which is quite niche compared to the North American market. What's some of the influences from modern day that you feel are some of the more influential people that you've encountered through those connections?
Yeah, well, I'm a member of the Australian Cartoonists Association, and they've actually just had their they do a newsletter called Ink Spots. They've actually featured Sai's previous event, just came out like a 2 days ago, and so that might be on Chronicle Chamber at some point. But I'm a member of the judging committee for the Ledger Awards. So, which are now the Comics Art Awards of Australia. And so the particular area there where I'm on is the Ledger of Honour, which is often celebrating a lot of the classic artists. So some of the forgotten men and women, but and some of them who are still working. So each year there's a person who's passed away chosen. And there's also someone who is a living legend. So some of the people there have been people that I was lucky to meet earlier on, people like Peter Chapman, people like Paul Whelihan, and they worked for companies like Fru. They worked sort of in the golden age. So I was quite lucky to meet some of those people, but also some of the more modern people. Early on, I was still in school. I was able to do a story with Dylan Naylor that was
Wow.
published. Who is now probably one of the greatest Australian artists. I started out just being a fan, sending in little drawings and letters. I was one of the original showbag kids who'd send in the little drawings, and eventually got in one of his comic books. So I think, and even just being part of Fru Publications at the moment with a lot of the new artists they have coming on, a lot of the, especially some of the, the younger men and women that are coming in doing the cover art, I think it's really great to see just some of the work that they're doing. So I think Australia is quite exciting at the moment in the comic book scene. But in terms of newspaper strips, we've had a bit of a blow recently where just about all of the newspaper strips are being cancelled in the they've been dropped by the newspapers. So that includes the Phantom and Ginger Meg's, ran for over 102 years and it's gone now. Very sadly, the paper just decided to drop it on the Thursday, and Sunday that was the last one. So
We
yeah,
just
it's that's
had
a
the
shame.
Stanleys, didn't we? And the
That's right.
was in Melbourne.
That's right. So the Stanley Awards, and we had there, of course, the Comic Book Award, which went to Gary Chaloner, who
Wow.
has done some Phantom work, and of course, the legendary Glenn Lumsden has won often, and Paul Mason, who we all love. So
Absolutely. And
yeah.
so with a newer generation of people across the Australian society that you're involved with, the people that fall into the Ledger Award category and the Stanley Award category and the crossovers that there are there, amongst that newer generation, and we're hearing from some veterans from the industry from North America. Are you in your prime at the moment in those in the Australian market? Where do you think the future is? So we've got Sai going back more than 50 years into the industry. If we look forward 50 years into the future, what do you, if you had your crystal ball out, what do you think the medium is going to be for that outlet of cartooning and comics?
I think probably comic books and also the internet are probably going to be the larger areas. I don't know if newspapers will come back in Australia. I think probably comic books, possibly crowd-funded projects seem to work well. I think, and really that helps the readers find what they really want to support. So I think that's a good market. But I think Australia, I think, is going to probably, keep producing some good artists and writers, and I think there'll be opportunities, and there already is, for them to be published overseas. Of course, Daniel, a phantom artist, is now being published with Ghost Rider. He's taking on the world. It's quite exciting, really, to see some of the amazing artwork that's been done. So I think that's probably what I see in Australia, probably the comic book side, and that's not for a lack of talent with the newspaper strips, but just that they really don't have an outlet, unfortunately.
Thank you. And I'm going to come back to the excellent segue that you had given me there with the Draw for Life article that was in InkSpot. But I'm going to ask a question from the chat so that there's a lot of love coming through the chat there for the work that's getting done here and for the artists. Everyone's commenting on Lou's amazing contribution. There's a lot of love for Sai, and everyone's saying that Jeremy's being way too humble. Because we all know the tremendous influence you have, but particularly over the fan community with your work. So anything that you bring out is automatically a fan favorite. Just as a reminder, you can send likes and thumbs up and different emoticons onto each of the artists' feeds if you want to by looking at their particular screens, or you can put it into the chat. And Paul M in the chat has asked, and I'll ask each of the artists this question: which character was your favorite to draw, and what, who or what did you dread seeing in a story? And while I'm on you, Jeremy, I'll ask you first. So, your favorite character in the Phantom Universe to draw, now that you're doing sequentials, and what did you dread seeing in a story?
I think probably my favorite is probably Hero and the Phantom, of course, but I do really love Hero. Of course, I love the way he was drawn in the classic strips. I love how he was drawn by the Italian artists. I actually correspond a lot with the Italian artists, so we correspond over letters and email, and
Wow.
we talk a lot about what we like. They've got very strong opinions about different things they like and love, but I think hearing a lot of the things that have been important to them has been really interesting and good, especially very sadly because a lot of the classic Italian artists are getting older and there's not as many left, sadly, at the moment. It's always interesting to hear, they're always how much they love the American strips, how much they love Cy, they love Hal Foster. They love Alex Raymond. These to them are their superheroes. And to them, someone like Stan Drake is a rock star. And I may have a signed head photo of Stan Drake just over there that he's autographed. But people like that, I think, need to be remembered. And we're lucky to have, magazines like Comics Revue, very lucky to be able to do some of the covers for that. And yeah, so I think, I really do love a lot of the classic art, but I also love modern art too. I think I love both worlds. So I think I'm quite lucky that I can appreciate a whole lot of things and really love both. But yeah, I think to answer your question, probably Hero.
Well, it's something, and it was mentioned in the chat. A lot of artists can steer away from horses because they can be quite difficult to draw, particularly in action. But it's something that you seem to run towards as accepting, embracing the challenge. My observation of your work, whether it's the original line work or once it's been coloured, it always has a warmth to it. I could sit and look at your pieces for a very long time, and the lines are so clean, but to me, having met you several times, your personality really comes out in your work because it's that you can see the care you've taken and the commitment you've put into the piece that you're doing as we're watching happen before our eyes here. But it's an absolute unique part of your artwork that there is a warmth to the pieces that you create. So whatever you're doing, keep doing that, Jeremy. Lou, I'm going to ask the Paul's question to you as well. What is your favorite character to draw in the Phantom Universe, and
Gorin.
what would you dread having to draw?
I liked Gorin. I thought he was an interesting character. You could play with his expressions a lot. You give him, he can play off the Phantom. So the expressions that you can't give the Phantom, sometimes you can give to him. And he's sort of like he's an Alfred to the Phantom and stuff like that. So I kind of like drawing him. I think when I did the hunt for Moonstone, I think the castle stuff I wasn't crazy about. Although you can play with the shadows on that as well, but no, maybe I like the castle. I think there was a bomb sequence at the towards the end, which I didn't feel really enjoy doing for some reason. But I think that was it. I like the horse part, even though he's difficult to do. I did a few shots where he's a heroic character coming out of the rain and stuff like that. So I think
The water.
I don't like doing interior of houses and stuff. Those are things that are boring to me, like kitchens and stuff like that. So what's good about the Phantom is you don't have that often. So that was good. But I don't like that too much. Just some sequences I didn't care for, but probably because I could have handled them different. Every time you draw something, you always think you do a better job later on. You can when it's done and you feel like, well, I could have did this, I should have done that, or sometimes you go deep and you push the page and you go, oh, wait a minute, if I'd have just reversed that angle, it would have been so much more dramatic or so much more effective. So I guess that's something we all have to deal with. When I was starting out with the Legion of Superheroes, I broke down the artwork for the main artist on that book. He liked the fact that I gave him everything that he needed in really rough form, but it was there and it was his option to erase or clip or whatever you want to do, but just getting it all down on the page was the main thing for him. That was the breaking down the story was the hardest part for him, but I found that easier for me. So we worked well together back then. But
Amazing.
as far as the Phantom, I think almost anything you do with him is kind of enjoyable.
Thanks, Lou. And Sai, a lot of history to draw from your time creating the Phantom Universe and the reference most of the artists use now for what aspects of that world look like. What character was your favorite for you to draw?
I was thinking about that, and I think the Redbeard pirate and his crew. Remember when the Phantom had to take them all on
Yes.
one at a time? He had a sword fight with Redbeard,
Yep.
and he of course he didn't kill him. He didn't wound him, but he managed to knock him down. And they never quite finished their sword fight. But I love the character. I love drawing him and presenting him as a much larger character than the Phantom. And to me, the Phantom was supposed to be very
Solid.
large in presentation. I mean, he's always bigger than everyone else, a little taller. But when Redbeard came in, he probably was like 6'5", 6", and a huge guy with that flowing beard, that red beard. It was quite a character, and I loved the shirt I put on him with the flowing full sleeve,
Yep.
that kind of character. And I hated to change him into a jungle patrol costume. Even though it very much in the next sequence, the next story, I wanted to get him into a. I wanted to keep that character and that costume that he wore. It was a fascinating character. I loved it, and I always look forward to his coming back, and presenting him again. There was another villain, Bababoo. Do you remember him?
Yep, General Bababoo.
He had a wrestling fight with what's his name? The president of Bengala,
The Mandaluaga.
Luaga. Is that his name? Luwaga? I think his
Luwaga,
name
that's right.
was.
You've got
Yes,
it.
he became president. Now, his becoming a black president, I mean, that was so long and needed to be happening. I mean, they had all white administrators and a white colonel, Colonel Winks. I think his
Colonel
name was
Weeks,
Colonel Winks.
yep,
Weeks.
Weeks, yeah.
Yeah, so then, but Luwaga was, I made him a handsome, well presentable individual who looks like presidential. You know, he looked with a little gray hair, a little bit of gray hair. And his fight with Bababu, I enjoyed drawing that. That was a lot of fun. So those were basically the villains. Those were the villains that I enjoyed drawing. I also enjoyed doing the twins, you know, Kit and
Kit and
Eloise.
Eloise.
Not Kit, yeah, Kit, right. And also when Rex was first introduced, he was left behind by his grandparents or his aunt and uncle or something,
That's right.
and
Yep.
he grew up. Phantom made him his ward. He was a good character to draw too. So
And
those were basic.
you've mentioned that the models for Kit and Heloise were taken from your memories and pictures of your own children. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so is David what the Phantom, what Kit will grow up to look like as the 22nd Phantom?
Well, it, you know, we've made the Phantom when he's had his hood off, and we have a back view of him, you know, when he's on the beach with Diana, you know, that kind of thing, when he doesn't have a costume. I think his hair is kind of brownish. It's not dark and black like David's is. No, I fashioned him. I just kind of made up both their faces. I really didn't fashion them after anyone. I made them up.
Right.
I designed them myself.
And for those listening and watching the stream, your love of Redbeard as a creation came out in Dietmar Liederwasch's series of paintings that he did when you did the founding of the Jungle Patrol painting, with all of them standing behind in those costumes that you originally made for the Jungle Patrol, because Redbeard went on to with his original band to be the first members of the Jungle Patrol. That's a fantastic part of Phantom history.
I designed that costume somewhat after the Three Musketeers.
It really,
that,
it really
how
shows. And I'm not sure. In the Sunday story, not too long ago, Jeff Weigel paid homage to that story and your actual artwork of the fight you just described between the Phantom and Redbeard. And he credited it to you after Cy Barry. Did you see his interpretation of that art?
Did I see it?
Yeah.
Of which art was that?
Jeff Weigel did a Sunday story where there was a flashback to the 13th Phantom and the founding of the Jungle Patrol.
Oh, I didn't see that. No, I didn't see that.
We'll
I
organize
didn't see
this. We'll organize to send you the digital version so you can see that he
right.
credited you, but you could see the influence of your story that you just mentioned
in a
recent Sunday strip.
Yeah, I understand. Incidentally, it was one of my favorite. I always refer to that sequence of the beginning of the Jungle Patrol. I always refer to that sequence as my favorite sequence of all of them.
Oh,
I don't know
fantastic.
why.
You've inspired me to you've inspired me to pitch
the
a
Asian guy who we wrestled with.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought that was a great character. I would have liked to do him again. But, you know, he couldn't really see what they You can see what their hair was like because they always had their hats on.
That's right. That's exactly right. You've inspired me to pitch to Fru a return of Redbeard story.
Oh,
If only
okay.
so that we'll dig up those old volumes and go back to reading your old story from back then. And the other half of
Okay.
Paul's question, Si, was what did you dread? So those scripts showing up back in the day from Lee's typewriter coming to you, and is there any other aspect of the universe that you dreaded going, oh, we're not drawing this again, are we? Or something that you felt particularly challenged by having to draw?
Well, I'll tell you what I really resented, and I would beg him to please don't do it. He would present stories with larger armies, and a panel with dialogue, and I'm losing you.
Can you hear us
Hello?
okay? We can still hear you okay, sir.
Oh, you can hear me? Okay. Oh, there you are. And the more I'd say, please, Lee, cut down the amount of figures that I have to draw in this thing. Give me a break and give me a chance to get ahead on stuff. And he'd give me these stories of on then he'd even introduce another army opposing this army. And he was I mean he, whatever I tried to do to pick up my schedule and get some shortcuts. And then he found a way of adding the work to it. It was incredible. And then I would look at Mandrake and I'd see Fred Frederick's work, and it was the most open, clean, open work with a very few figures in it and very few backgrounds. And I mean, what was he writing for this guy that he made it so simple? And why is he crowding up my artwork, you know? It just seemed incredible to me. So we have always had a little tug of war going on all the time.
It's amazing to hear that the magic that came out of your drawing board all those years, that there was things that challenged you. Oh, it always seems so effortless.
That
The
was my
and you've also
first.
go
That
on.
was my only frustration in life, really. I mean, I was enjoying my life other than the obstacles that he kept throwing in my way. It was incredible. Very difficult. Very, it was a very.
You've also explained why during your tenure there wasn't a sequel to The Phantom Goes to War.
A
There's
sequel to
too
what?
many, a sequel to The Phantom Goes to War story,
Oh,
because there
Ghost
was
of
too much
War. Oh.
armies versus armies, a
Yeah,
thousand
right.
Zulu warriors.
Do that. You're right. But that's really what you look back, you'll see some of the incredible amount of work we had to put into it. Unbelievable.
And we remain the beneficiaries of that work today, Si.
Oh.
We're looking like some of the work, the pieces are coming to a conclusion, and I'm going to soon throw to Dan to do the draw for the people that have been patiently watching and salivating over their screens as they're seeing these pieces of art being created. I'll quickly go through just some final pieces in the chat. And there's a lot of love for your Redbeard side. There's a lot of positive comments about that. Ross has
Oh, there it
mentioned, yes. And Ross has mentioned that George Ollerson had the opportunity to draw a follow-up to the Jungle Patrol origin story with
Yes.
Redbeard included in it for the Swedish publishers. And it was also
Really?
reprinted in color by Wolf. So for those of the fans that have got those in the collection, it might be time to dig those out. The Ross also said the Jungle Patrol story, founding of the Jungle Patrol story, has everything. Probably a lot of fans' favorites from the Barrie era, and I would agree to that. And there's a lot of love for that story in the chat.
Wonderful.
And some more positive comments about Lou's work. Jeremy's work in progress saying that it should be. I'm going to get the exact wording of this because it's a very nice compliment.
Right.
Chat here. It's gone.
Well, you
Someone
know,
in
I
there. Oh, here it
didn't
is.
know.
From Ross. In relation to your picture there, Jeremy, his drawing looks like it could have been the cover for one of those old Italian Uomo Mascherato, the masked man digest size comics from the late 60s and 70s.
Oh, what a compliment.
And knowing how popular they are amongst the collectors of original art, that is indeed a compliment. One thing I wanted to close off on with you, Sai, is there's been some comments in the chat, and Jeremy mentioned it quickly while we were talking to him earlier, and it's in relation to the connect your connection to the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Institute, which we're raising money for today. And there's two things I wanted to bring up. One of them was your personal connection to the Dana-Farber Institute and your work with the children there in the ward where you were working with them. And I'll ask you that story. And also that your Draw for Life charity that you did through David earlier in the year. So just your first connection to Dana-Farber when you were working with the kids, what can you tell us about that?
Well, everything I did for them were wonderful experiences, and I'm really grateful for David even presenting it to me when we first started on this, because it made me feel so good in going through this adventure. And we did start one of the occasions that I was there. This is a very, very deep and emotional story. After I had finished my presentation with children, they were all sitting around in a circle on the floor, and I had my easel up, and a great big pad, and I was drawing all the different characters that they were asking for. A lot of them television characters, Curious George and Dora the Explorer, but a lot of them asked for Spider-Man and Batman. They were the most wanted characters to be drawn. I got done with that whole session, and we were just cleaning up, closing up, and getting ready to leave. And one of the administrators came over to me and said, "Mr. Barry, could you do us a great favor? Could you please join me upstairs? There's one little boy who's getting a treatment right now. And I wonder if you could possibly go up, and he's kind of in pain with the treatment. I wonder if you go up and give him a do a little drawing for him." And I said, "Of course." So they dressed me in the full 9 yards of protective equipment, protective wear, with a gown, with a mask, and a cap, and gloves. And so imagine working with a marker, wearing those thin gloves. So I set up the easel and the pad, and I said, "Okay, here are some pictures. I had little drawings of different characters. Which one would you like?" He said, "Ooh," and he was in pain. His mother was sitting next to him, holding his hand, and the nurse was giving him his chemo. And I said, "What picture would you like to do, Steve?" He said, "Oh, Spider-Man." Okay, so I did a quick drawing of Spider-Man. I even colored in with a red marker, and the blue marker. And as I was drawing, it was the most beautiful experience I ever had. As I was drawing, his face changed from pain. He was uncomfortable, like he hardly opened his eye. And he started looking, and his eyes opened up, and he started to see the character come into form. And his eyes lit up, and he had a big smile on his face. And he was so happy, and he didn't know that I was going to give him the drawing. When I got done with it, I said, "Guess what? This is for you." He was so happy. He was so delighted. It was unbelievable to see that face change into a smile. I mean, as I was walking out, I couldn't hold back my tears. I just visualized him as my grandson, and what my grandson would be going through. It was such an emotional moment. And I said, "Boy, whatever they're doing for the children, God bless them, because those kids need that help so badly." That's why I'm doing the Dana-Farber. So
That is
I can never
amazing.
give it up. I love it. I love it. I just I really praise David for even getting involved in it because it gives me such joy, right?
And it's amazing after the esteemed career that you've led, Si, that there's still passion in you and drive to
Oh,
continue to give more.
I still have compassion for the compassion for the for what's for the fandom. I hate to see what's happening with comics and book comic books are waning. I would like to see if these same characters or new characters can be developed in another medium, maybe like a gas and oil has have to be start to change their fuel directives. That may have to happen. Maybe something in the Pixar or games or something else in the electronic area. I think that's the future, the electronic area. I don't
I
think
think
print is going to it's
I
going to
and
be lasting forever.
I think your opinion is shared by a lot of creators and a lot of fans. And I know that there is a lot of excitement and anticipation for the game that's due to be released next year to see what interest that spurs on by increasing the fan base for the character. And just while the extension of that experience that you had at Dana-Farber was David did a lot of work in the background, and I know Jermaine and some of the Chronicle Chamber crew, Christian Fattoruso and Jaime Diaz were supporting David in putting some of that work together, and they did the drawforlife.org website that you've got active, which links back to Dana-Farber. And you also did the charity auction where you appealed to
Yes, the
your
author.
peers and colleagues across the industry in Australia, Scandinavia, in the US. And I think there might have been a Canadian artist as well, contributing pieces that were auctioned off to raise money for the Jimmy Fund, and Dana-Farber. Is that something that you'd like to see participate, continue into the future? Would you like to see drawforlife.org perpetuate?
Absolutely, for as long as I'm around. I don't know how long, but I'm here. I'm a
And
candidate.
the impetus for it, the origins of that Draw for Life campaign and the charity, and that linking it into Dana-Farber and bringing everyone together today, is a testament to your work and your passion, Si, and the kind of person that you are. The reason that we've got Lou to devote his time, Jeremy to his time, and these people getting up at different times around the world is because they believe in the work that you have done and the motivation behind the work that you have done in helping other people. And
I want them to know how much.
I
I
speak for
do
lots
want them
of
to know.
people all around the world now and in the future, Si, in saying that the look on that little boy's face is echoed by lots of people around the world when they view your work, and that will be forever. You will continue to influence generations of fans.
Well, I just hope it'll be my legacy. If I could leave that behind, I'd be fully content with my life. Fully content.
Well, we're honored that we're the beneficiaries of all the work that you've done, and we're honored that you're sharing your time with us today. I'm going to, before I go back to the artists and ask them for any final comments today, I'm going to throw to Dan Fraser, who is going to put a lot of people on the edge of their seat as he decides who the winners are of these fantastic pieces. So, Dan, I'm going to throw to you, and we might draw the winner for Lou's piece first.
Are these
Right.
going to be, will somebody have some value in receiving them or being used for a good purpose drawings?
So they'll go to the individual's personal collection, Si, but they'll also be publicized on the Chronicle Chamber website. And the money that we raise by the people who are in the everyone that's been watching for the last almost 2 hours have donated money to come into the room, into the stream today. And those funds will be redirected with David's support to the Dana-Farber Institute.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Anything that would contribute to their to their work and their purpose. So I'm all for. I admire that group so much, the clinic. And I mean, I'm a patient there myself, and it's a very important institution for me anyway, very important.
And we can see that, and your generosity by being here today, as well as Lou and Jeremy, is very much appreciated by us. Dan.
I want to thank the other two and offer them my best of luck and good life too.
You too. Sorry, sorry. You're one of the best of all time,
Right.
not just as an artist, but as a person.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sai. It's such an honor to be here with you
I
and
am going
Lou.
to come
Oh,
back and ask
I
each of
love
the
you.
artists to make their sign-off comments. I'm just going to hold it there while we've taken over the screen so we can't see your faces, gentlemen. And Dan's going to spin the wheel, and the first name we're going to draw is for the winner of or the lucky recipient of Lou Manners' piece today that you can see beautifully detailed in front of you. Dan, spin
All
the
right.
wheel.
Spin that wheel.
Okay.
And my barrel girl, we've come up with, as everyone can see on there, almost a liner, but Trevor C. Trevor Clark, having to being the new owner of that the Lou Manners wonderful piece there. Trevor, thank you for your donation and your time today, and your generous support of not only the Dana-Farber cause, but also expanding the Chronicle Chamber. And if there's a way to take that winner out
Yeah,
of the mix,
I have
and
removed
then
Trevor, so
perfect, we're ready to go again, and we'll do
ready to go again.
Jeremy's Italian 1960s cover that he's done there before somebody
All
snaps it up and makes it a published cover.
right.
Australian fans, anyone who's not in Australia is starting to think this competition is quite rigged with Paul M, Paul Maloney winning Jeremy's piece there. Well deserved, and a very caring home that that piece is going to. Jeremy, I'm sure once you've finished off there, Paul will be right on top of making sure that gets delivered safely to his house and given a place of honour. And if we just take that name out of the mix as well, we'll spin the wheel again for Sai's tremendous piece that he's been working on while he's been chatting to us today.
I should have been done with it.
And no, it's you've got plenty of time, Sai. It's all good. And Pete G, I think Pete Gosling is who Pete G is. Congratulations, Pete, on winning Sai's piece there that's being created. The provenance of these pieces could not be more authentic, having seen them be created before our eyes. So congratulations to our three winners out of today, but the big winner is the Dana-Farber Institute.
Right.
And I'm just going to do a bit more of a reminder about that cause that we just talked to Sai in great detail about before I go to our guests, to thank them for their time and allow them to give any final comments to the team. But Dana-Farber's wide range of patient and family support services help patients move through their cancer experiences, as we just heard through Sai's personal telling of that story. Since 1947, Dana-Farber has forged a groundbreaking path with more than 75 years of research, discovery, and innovation that have revolutionized cancer diagnosis and treatment. Fitting beneficiary of this evening's event. Further information on the programs funded by your donations and to learn how you can contribute, just like Sai does, go to dana-farber.org, dana-farber.org. And I'm going to throw quickly to each of the guests and give them an opportunity to, if there's any last comments they want to make to the group or to each other. But from Expanding the Chronicle Chamber, I want to thank each of you for your time. Lou, is there anything you wanted to say to the group?
No, I'd just like to thank you and everyone involved. And when David asked once before about the draw, the charity event, it was a great cause. This is a great cause. I think the thing about the Phantom is it brings people together throughout the entire world. I mean, I've met so many people from Australia, Sweden, and all over, It never would have happened without the Phantom. So it's a great cause for a great person to help him out. And I'm just happy and honored to be part of it. Thank you all.
Thank you, Lou. It's amazing to have to be able to share this time with you. Jeremy, is there anything you wanted to say to the group?
I guess, wanted to thank everyone for their comments. Thank everyone for, allowing me to be part of it. To thank Lou for his work on the Thunder Agents and DC, which I've always enjoyed. To thank Sai, of course, who is such an inspiration to all of us and, so loved his artwork. Many of us who grew up with it, we just love it.
Your
Gonna make me.
humility is always remarkable, Jeremy. Thank you very much for joining us. And Sai, I'm going to leave the last word with you from our guests. Thank you very much on behalf of everyone for giving us your time in your evening and our morning to have this discussion today and share this wonderful experience.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Jeremy, and Lou. I just am very delighted. This has been a special occasion for me because I've never been on an interview with another artist, and I've always wanted to hear other artists' feeling about working on the Phantom and how they felt working on it, and where their with where their likes and dislikes were, if there were any. So sharing that with you has been a very novel and refreshing experience, and just hearing some of the things that I experienced myself, that other artists have experienced, that too is refreshing. And I've been so grateful for all your wonderful comments, and I want to thank you so much. How could I even miss an opportunity like this, hearing those beautiful comments to me? And as I said, that if I've left any kind of legacy behind, that would fulfill everything I've ever wanted. And I just want to know that those 33 years of working on the Phantom has been such a beautiful and fulfilling experience, artistically, emotionally, and financially as well. Thank you all for everything you've done, and again, have been making this possible. Jermaine, you've done, and Monroe, I just wanted you guys to know how much David and I both appreciate what you're doing and making it possible to get our words around how important Dana-Farber is. So thank you so much, guys, and I will always be in your gratitude, in our gratitude, really.
So you can rest assured that your legacy is well and truly secured, not just in Phantom lore, but in the lives of everyone that you've managed to touch through your personal interaction and your work. It will live forever. All that
Thank you.
remains for me is to thank our guests for their generous contribution of their time and their talent this evening. I want to thank the attendees for their support and congratulate their lucky three winners on taking home some unique pieces of Phantom art. If you get in touch with Chronicle Chamber through their website or directly through the email at chroniclechamber@gmail.com, they'll organise for those pieces to be sent out to you. So some of those unique pieces of Phantom art that will not only look great, but it will give you all a sense of satisfaction knowing that you saw its creation and contributed to those less fortunate than you. I want to make a special thank you to the Chronicle Chamber team of Dan, Jermaine, and Stephen for their work and support behind the scenes to make this event a reality, and for their continued efforts in support of the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Institute. All that remains for me to do is to say thank you one last time to our very special guests, not just for their time tonight, but for the continued work they have devoted towards the Phantom, and for me to say good night and happy Phantoming.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.